Hi, Dr. Borton. I hear you're going on a big voyage.
Well, actually, I'm going on a flight. My wife is having a reunion with some grade school friends that she hasn't seen. We won't say for quite how long, but since high school days.
So, where are you off to?
Greece. Flying really changes your aspect on time because get to Greece, even three lifetimes ago, you had to take a clipper ship, and it would take maybe months to get to Greece from here. And the Erie Canal made it so you could get to Buffalo in a couple of days, well, a week, order of a week, rather than take weeks or months to go bushwhack through the woods or ride a horse to Buffalo. So, yes, transportation has speeded up our understanding of time and place on this planet.
Now, as a physicist, how do you succinctly and concisely define time?
Time is one of those basic variables like mass and length. You understand mass, we have different units for mass.
Right.
You understand length, we have different units for length.
Yep.
Okay, and time is another one of those basic units. So that energy, for example, is E equals mc squared, and m is this mass unit, and c is this length divided by time, right?
Right.
So there are these basic units that basically explain the physical world around us.
Can you just elaborate, though, on how time is used in equations?
Okay.
And how time is defined?
okay, I'm not going to try the definition, but I will say that, for instance, if you're in a car and you're going at a certain velocity, say 60 miles an hour, the miles is a length unit and the hour is a time unit. That's velocity. And then if you speed up, that's an acceleration. And if you stop, then that's a deceleration. So those are basic things with mass, length, and time.
In another segment of Equality Under the Law of Practical Physics, you said that time works the same way in other solar systems, but how do we know that?
Oh, because we understand that mass is mass, whether it's on this Earth or on some exoplanet around some other star light years away. And we understand that on that planet, wherever it is, you can measure things with length units. And so we've got mass, length, and time, and the physics is going to work the same on those exoplanets as it works here.
But are there possibilities in quantum mechanics of time bending or warping?
Well, yes, in the sense that Einstein and special relatively and general relatively think of gravity as a warping of space-time,
Okay.
where you have space having four dimensions rather than three. And so you understand the three dimensions
Yeah.
around us, and the fourth dimension is time. And you can think of time as being just another one of these dimensions. Now, this is a little hard to do, okay? But if I clap my hands here, there are going to be places that won't know that I've clapped my hands until long after my hands have clapped because they're so far away. So that in that length of dimension, they don't know whether something happens at the same time as I clap my hands or not. They don't have a way of knowing that.
Who's they?
The people on this exoplanet a couple of light years away.
So, do you ever enjoy getting into the possible ambiguity of the linearity and homogeneity of time as we experience it in these bodies?
Well, I am so happy with the three-dimensional Earth that we live in and the time that is the length of my life that I'm just so happy being here with what's called classical physics. Classical physics still works. These things that happen at very small scales, like quantum mechanics, and at very large scales, like general relativity, really don't affect my life or your life or our listeners' life. Now, it's nice to know that there are these changes in the laws of physics at very small scales, very short times, very big scales. But does that affect you and me? Not really.
Okay, I guess I'm still curious as to how there is some sort of breakdown in the linearity and communication of time or something, but you're saying that it happens on such small levels that we don't perceive it, or it just doesn't matter to our lives.
Okay, you can conceive of a situation where it might matter, but it's a real stretch. In other words, if we had a radioactive counter, a Geiger counter, and we waited until the 57,000th and one click of that counter, and at that time the world blows up, we could either be on the world or we could be on the moon, and we'd either live or we wouldn't live. Now that's, again, a far-fetched example, but you really have to go to far-fetched examples to get away from the security of our three-dimensional Earth and time that is relatively linear throughout our lives.
So do you watch a lot of science fiction and just guffaw at the absurdity from your perspective of these fantastical scenarios?
I enjoy science. The science is more interesting to me than the science fiction.
I was telling you before this broadcast of how a student has inspired me to take flying lessons.
Oh, flying is a great example of physics, right? You can look at the way an airplane is held up in the air either as a pressure difference that's created between the top and the bottom of the wing, or you can look at it as a change in momentum of the air as the airplane goes through the air. And there are propeller planes, and there are ramjet planes, and there are turboprop planes, and there are pure jet planes, there are rocket planes. So there's a whole lot of physics in flying.
This student has done the research and has seen that only 2% of the commercial airline pilots are female. And so that was one of her reasons for wanting. She's just very passionate about flying and being a part of, you know, this career and being proud of the fact that she would be not only pursuing her passion, but also helping to break down very antiquated gender roles.
There's another thing that's a first that's happening right around here, and that is a company called Cape Air is buying electric-powered airplanes for flights. I don't know if they'll go from Boston to Albany or not, but maybe from Boston to some of the islands, because those are short-hop flights, and battery planes would work. And battery planes, of course, are much cleaner than the planes that we fly now.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because I'm really getting excited about the flight lessons, but then there's also all of the environmental implications of flying a plane. So with these electric planes that you're talking about, obviously you have these massive chargers. Like, do you know anything about the engineering of how it's all set up?
Well, it's very much the same as the way you charge your cell phone, only it's a bigger battery with more energy storage and more draw from the grid. But basically, you just charge up a battery, and then you're good to go. I have flown a few airplanes that my friends have let me fly, and it is intriguing to think about sitting in a dual-place electric trainer, which is a relatively easy airplane to fly, and it would be relatively quiet, and it would be very clean. I think you know that electricity gives you lots of torque right away, so it would be a relatively quick acceleration down the runway and up into the air. So, yeah, that sounds like great fun.
So is there an appeal to you also as a solar boat captain to be both a solar pilot in the air and on the sea?
Okay, well, it's not going to be solar in the air.
Oh, right. I mean, well, cleaner. Yeah.
Yes, yes. Well, and I drive an electric car for the same reason.
Right.
That A, it's cleaner, and B, it's more fun because it's quieter and it's got more pep, if you will, because the full torque is available for all RPM of the motor, which is not the case in an internal combustion engine.
Well, any final words on electric airplanes and time?
Okay, it's time for everybody to fly in electric airplanes. How's that?
Yeah, solar and electric, everything, you know.
I agree. Let's make it happen.
Thanks, Dr. Borton.
Thanks, Megan. It's always very nice.